Educational Communications and this station present Environmental Directions with Nancy Perlman. On this series, we explore the effects of human influence on the Earth's ecosystems and discuss solutions to environmental problems which affect the quality of life on this planet. Environmental Directions gives you the kind of information you need to help you participate in decisions impacting your community, the nation, and the world. Now, here's your host, Nancy Perlman.
Hello, I'm here at the Animal Rights National Conference. With me is Pei Su. She is the CEO of ACT Asia. She is the former Member Societies Director of World Animal Protection. She is the recipient of the Next Generation Award, as well as the International SIVA Animal Welfare Award. Welcome, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
You have been working for over 25 years to foster compassion for animals, particularly in Asian societies. And I think that's where we need to start, that the attitude toward animals is a little different than in Europe and the United States. I've traveled to Asia, and they're willing to eat dogs. We consider those companion animals. They don't have the same kind of compassion in places like China as we do. What do you see as the difference?
I think culturally or in the education, when we grew up, we would not have a direct experience with animals as close as the West. In school, you've never been told animals have feelings. Animals are not just objects. And animals just tend to be seen as part of environment, but it's there. But you don't really have to particularly feeling with them. And you don't learn they have emotion too, they are sentient. And I think that's what's missing. And particularly if you don't grow up to have dog and cats, you really have no that personal relationship or bond with these animals. And I see that's a major difference in Asia.
Language is so important. Apparently in Chinese, animals means moving objects?
Yes, this is summed up very, very well about how we don't really understand animals have feeling. They are sentient, they feel fear, they have the needs to be loved, to care, because in the language itself, dong, wu, dong is moving, wu is objects. So it sums up very well why we're not treating animals as expected in the West, because we just don't see them as sentient beings.
Do you see a difference in the different countries and cultures in Asia toward domesticated animals versus the wildlife?
Yes, Asia is a vast continent. You know, we're talking very different from India, Pakistan, Nepal, and then to Thailand, Vietnam, and then into, you know, East Asia like China, Japan, Korea. They're all very different. Some of the weather will be more tropical weather, some of them is continental type of weather. So I think that make the attitude to animals very different. But overall, I still think our relationships with animals has not been nurtured, you know, has not been developed in a positive way. And that's what causing a lot of issues in the modern society.
Coming from Taiwan, you focus heavily on the Chinese community. But as you mentioned, we're talking about a continent with over 2 billion people, multiple cultures, multiple environments and ecosystems. So the attitudes will vary.
Yes, indeed. It's very different, varies, you know, across the continent. However, the value of animals' life and the importance of compassion and empathy, it should be no difference. We should learn in that part of the world, animals are sentient. Animal is just not objects. Animals are not there for humans to use endlessly. And they should be treated with respect. They should be treated with the certain method to eliminate the unnecessary suffering.
You settled in the United Kingdom, and yet you travel to Asia. You're developing a Caring for Life program. Can it be applicable to the English or the Americans, as well as the Chinese or the Indians or any other group of people? Is the Caring for Life program the same, or how do you adapt it?
I think Caring for Life education is one of its first to teach kids compassion, empathy through a very thorough research and well-developed curriculum. So kids will receive the education, this program, through 6 years of curriculum. So what we really want to try to do is create a new generation within institutions, inside the school, for teachers to teach them how to respect people, kind to animals, and protect environment. And so I see a lot of issues across the world, or even in Asia, they are interlinked. I just come back from Pakistan. I see animals are suffering there, but so does human, and the environment are destroyed. So I just see how we cannot address one issue on its own. We should build in within education to say, you know, to be compassionate to humans, and so do animals, and you've got the responsibility to protect environment. And I feel we haven't paid enough attention to the children. They have lots of compassion and empathy, and the longer they stay in school, they maybe lost more of their original ability.
With your education program, have the schools, the educational systems in these other countries been receptive to your message, or do they think that you're some wild, crazy, nutsy person out there or group?
Very good question to make. In 2012, when I started our first pilot school in China, today we have over 100 schools, we have reached 65,000 children. At the first, I thought maybe we'll just do one, two, three, you know, to start if we're lucky, and we might be get kicked out. So when we design our curriculum, we will always think about what happened when we've been left, you know, half of the school term. But so far we haven't. So far we have been received lots of positive response to say how the kids have changed, how the school dynamics has changed. People are more pro-social, that means their class management was easier, kids was more compassionate to each other, they have less fighting, they understand, they have some school, the kids actually rescue animals themselves. So far the program has been so well received. That is not by our luck. That is because we have done our research and we do this strategically, and we communicate with the school, from the principal, from the authority. We don't go into school because one empathetic or sympathetic teacher. We make sure we enter the school properly. But the best thing is, we are not teaching class ourselves by Act Asia. We are training the teachers to teach our materials, teaching our curriculum. So the teacher, when they learn why it matters, they bought in. They actually was moved by themselves. And I think that's why the program can be sustained so far.
Not only do the countries in Asia have many different cultures and traditions and beliefs, you're also dealing with different religious beliefs that must play a role, from your work in Pakistan, which is mostly Muslim, to China with Confucianism, to Thailand with Buddhism, to India with Hinduism and Jain. And the attitude, again, differs according to the religious beliefs.
But I do believe the diversity is important in the world. The cultural diversity is important. However, the compassion empathy should be no boundaries. The other side of compassion empathy is violence. We are facing a global challenge, is the, you know, how to stop the violence in the world, including America. So we got to address the issue more fundamentally, more deeply. And I think no matter where we live, where we are, the methodology, the method might be different, but the key message about compassion, empathy, and the responsibility of human to human and non-human animals and environment should be no difference.
Traditionally, Asian diets were much more plant-based, but as the economies improved, people in the middle class and upper middle class wanted to show their wealth and started incorporating animals in their diets. In the United States, we're having a trend from a very animal-based diet to people trying to advocate plant-based diets. How do you see this change in Asia going back to their traditional roots.
First of all, I do think the Western country do have to take responsibility for this promoting the meat culture. I think the plant-based meal is indeed in that part of the world because we don't have that much dairy, you know, and the milk consumption was never that high. How to bring that back, I think, is again for people to understand not always the best is in the West. That's the thing. But the other thing, I think we are trying to create a generation to say you can live compassionately. You know, come back to why I say compassion and empathy. You know, people may not say, okay, what does a vegan mean? But if you tell the people, you know, you can live a compassionate lifestyle by creating a lifestyle that's less harm to animal, that is will reduce our abuse to the environment. And I think more people will want to join you. And I think it's that position of our message to come to reach the wider and big audience that's very important. Very often we focus on veganism, and sometimes you alienate people, they don't get it. But if we use plant-based, or if you say, you know what, you're a compassionate person, do you want to live a compassionate lifestyle? Most people will not disagree with you. They might not be able to be a vegan from tomorrow, but at least they can, for example, Monday eat out, they eat less. In our culture in China and Taiwan, you have a culture to have to be 2 days in a lunar calendar to be vegetarian or to be vegan. Have we promoted that more widely? And I think we have that compassion. When I was a child, my grandma used to do that. So the compassion is that, how we nurture it and to develop, to advance it further, I think that's our challenge.
One of the major problems I have had as a tourist in many different countries in Asia is seeing the cruel use of wildlife, from the elephants that are chained and the tourists get on to walk around on them, to the monkey grinders, to the bears, to the orangutans that should be in the wild. Wildlife does not belong in cages, does not belong as entertainment for human beings. The dolphin shows. How do we change the attitude? The Asians, when I was in the audience, seemed to love all of this.
I deeply understand what you're asking. In the past, I conducted a zoo campaign in Indonesia throughout the countries. There was one other thing I will never forget is I was filming this elephant trainer was training this young elephant, and he was beating him, and the elephant was so confused. He did not understand what we're supposed to do. Actually, the trainer was wanting him to sit down, but he didn't understand, he didn't get it. So he was beating, and so this young elephant was urinating, you know, was crying, it was screaming, all the process. And I do think nobody understands that's behind the thing. They haven't been told. The kids was not being educated to the way, say, you know, elephants should be in the wild. They were not educated to say they have a feeling. This elephant actually was like a little child, did not understand what the trainers want him to do. If we have told the kids, like what Caring for Life Education is trying to do, is show the kids the picture of elephants in the cage, or an elephant was doing a circus act, most of the kids will say, no, that is not nice, that's not right. So when they go home, they will tell the parents, please do not take me to see circus. So we need our generations. We need to have the kids tell their parents. Otherwise, these kids are growing up to say, it's okay to see circus, nothing wrong to see performers. Have we spent the time to do the education when we are busy to campaign? I'm not saying campaigning is wrong, but after 25 years, I feel very deeply we need to create the foundation. We need a sowing the seeds. We need to have a new generation, their compassion, empathy not killed by the ignorance of the teachers or the parents.
The other trend that I see in the many different countries that I have visited in Asia is that in the rural areas, animals that we consider here in the United States as domestic pets, cats and dogs. The cats have a role to keep the mice and the rats and the animals out of the grain storage areas. The dogs help. The domesticated animals or the companion animals have a purpose. But I found in the cities that more and more people are adopting cats and dogs as pets. Is this a healthy trend?
The world are changing. Different countries are developing. They are urbanization issues. The more and more rural part of China is townships has been abandoned. They want to be turned to urban cities. So the people's lifestyle are changing. With the lifestyle changing, their attitude towards animal will be changing. In the past, when the animals are living in the farm or living in the village, their relationship is like working animal, but it doesn't mean this animal should not be looked after. When the animal live with people at the house as a companion, their relationship was different. But fundamentally, this animal should have a right to be free from suffering. This animal should be have a right to be free from abuse. What the most of the case I have seen is people just don't understand. I always tell a lot of my Western friends, animals are not being understood. We're very ignorant in the way. The abuse comes from ignorance.
You certainly understand the need for humans to be compassionate to animals, and obviously that's why you have won awards like the Next Generation Award and the SIVA Animal Welfare Award. Your work to try to teach compassion is commendable. It's a difficult area to change traditions and attitudes.
I think as a activist or a person have been active in this movement for 25 years for defense for animal, I see clear the link between human, animal, and environment. And I see the change. We want the people to change their behavior. We want to bring that change to our society. We want to create long-lasting social change, even through veganism, by through animal rights or human rights or environmental rights, whatever the stand we take. I do think we do have to have a long-term strategy. We do have to want to spend the investment on creating that foundation. Not everything can be quick fixed. The social change will take time, and we need to think about where is that big picture, and then to bear that in mind and find the best method forward. I'm not saying one is better than the other one, but it does have to be more diverse.
What do you consider your biggest success and your biggest failure?
My big success, I think, is creating a Caring for Life education. Now it's a curriculum, has been developed from grade 1 to grade 6.
How many languages?
It's starting with English and then Chinese, and now we are planning to translate it to Urdu and Sindhi, and I hope more language will be translated even to Thai language. My biggest failure, I think, is my frustration with people. They don't see the big picture.
It's great that you see the big picture. It's great that you are trying to get that across, because the animals really, I'm sure, appreciate all your good work to get humans to love and care for them.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being my guest. I have been speaking with Pei Su, who is the CEO of ACT Asia. We'll be back in a moment with more ecological issues.
Environmental Directions with Nancy Perlman continues with further discussion of the world's critical ecological issues. For more information, you may call 310-559-9160 or go to www.ecoprojects.org. Now, here's Nancy.
I'm here in Los Angeles at the Animal Rights National Conference. With me is Vita Stram. She is the administrator for all-creatures.org and has been a vegan and animal rights activist for many decades. Welcome. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
You are focused primarily on a cruelty-free life through a vegan lifestyle according to Judeo-Christian ethics.
Yes.
And want to support people from that point of view?
Yes, to live that way.
So that your founder of this website that you have actually provides weekly sermons?
Yes. Frank Hoffman was a pastor, and he discovered animal liberation and veganism and tried to persuade his congregation to change their eating habits and a lot of their behavior toward animals, and he was not successful at it. And he became very frustrated about what to do to reach more people with his Christian message about kindness and compassion. So he learned web design in the mid-90s and designed all-creatures.org. What he's done is every week he writes a new sermon quoting different Bible passages to validate the fact that he believes God's intent was for people to take care of all of God's creatures. And that doesn't mean to take care of them, owning them, or using them, but to provide freedom and care and nurturing for all God's creatures. And that's what his sermons are about. He also has a vegan Christian discussion group through email that people participate in. He does personal ministry. So many people were discovering that if, for instance, their cat or their dog died, they would go to their rabbi or their priest or their reverend, and the person would tell them, well, that's too bad, just go buy a new one. So he saw that there was a need for someone of faith to have someone of faith to express their sadness and their loss of their companion.
I have seen the disappointment among individuals who have lost their pet, companion animal, their dog, cat, horse, and some can move on. Some, it's devastating. Mm-hmm. Every time my cats live a nice, healthy 20-year-old life, I have to wait a few weeks before I can go find the next cat to take care of.
Right.
But people handle it in different ways.
Yes.
I do find it interesting that some don't consider it as impactful. I remember sitting as an elected official on a board where we were asked to give an excused absence so that one of our trustees could get paid when his dog died because he didn't want to attend. Mm-hmm. So people do find it difficult.
Yeah, they do. And his purpose was for people of faith who went to their faith leaders. Their sorrow was dismissed. And so he provides, by phone and by email and by Skype, counseling for people of faith who want someone to talk to who appreciates what the loss means to them. That's one of several services that he provides. We also have an archival website with over 100,000 pages of animal rights articles, of poetry, good stories and sad stories about individual animals. So we keep presenting to the public the individuality of each creature. So we have 100,000 pages going back like 20 years of activism. And it's huge website. It's just
that's a lot of pages.
It's a lot of pages. And we've gone through several iterations of web design. So a lot of some pages look this way, other pages look that way, and we're committed to leaving the information up rather than take it down because it doesn't look as fancy as some of the bells and whistles websites. So Frank does his new sermon every week, and I post whatever I want to about animal liberation, veganism. We have a whole section on animals and religion, and those articles just are about animals and religion. We have another whole section on strategies for activists, and that section is just articles on different kinds of strategies. Some we agree with and some we don't, but the important thing is to keep giving people who care about animals and want to make a difference for animals, to provide them inspiration and education so they can go and be better activists and more successful.
What is the appropriate expression to tell somebody when they say their pet just died?
Personally, I would just say, I'm very sorry. I know how that hurts. I don't know that there's a one thing that, you know, would say to everybody. That's just one of my first personal responses.
Since you're advocating from a religious point of view, how do you approach the person who is secular, who isn't religious? Because one of the horrible things that they have to hear all the time is God bless you, or mm-hmm. the animals in heaven, you'll
right.
meet the animal then, and yet they might not believe in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a lifelong atheist. I am not a person of faith. And when Frank was looking for someone to do the job I do, which is posting things, I had talked to him and I told him that I was not a religious person and that I wasn't going to pretend to be, you know, by answering emails or phone calls. And he said that what he needed was an activist, more than a Christian at that time. And I've been there 11 years now, so it's obviously working out for both of us. So my response is always secular. And the purpose, what I have on my bio on the site is, why would an atheist work for a Christian animal rights site? And my response is simply, animals don't have religion. They don't care. We need everybody who cares about animals to be stronger and smarter in their activism. And for some people of faith, they find it very difficult, as I said before, in their churches to express their love for animals in a way that, you know, is satisfying for them. Some churches are actually very dismissive. Just recently, someone wrote they were very upset because they went to a church that their friends had said was very animal friendly, and the person from the front of the room, I can't remember if it was a priest or a rabbi or a reverend, said something about, oh, and we're all looking forward to the delicious bacon we'll have at our dinner tonight. Those things have been happening for years. Frank has been hearing about those situations for years. So one of the projects we have is a list of what we call animal-friendly churches, but we have different categories. So we have actually vegan-friendly churches, and those are people, we have talked to the people in charge, we have talked to people who participate there, and that's a place that if you're a vegan and an animal rights person, you can go there and feel welcomed. They may only have vegan options, but at least they have vegan options.
It is handy to have options.
Yes. But that's only vegan-friendly churches. Then we actually have vegan churches where the only food that is served is vegan. And then the third category is vegan pastors, because there are several pastors, priests, and rabbis who are vegan, and they don't promote it from the pulpit.
Christian churches often during the holiday Christmas season bring in live animals for their pageantries.
Right. That would not be a vegan-friendly church.
Is this appropriate by animal rights activists?
To bring live animals? No, because we believe animals have the right to be free from harm and free from exploitation. And whereas if I happen to have a sheep, I may take very good care of my sheep, and maybe I have a happy sheep who likes to stand in front of a nativity for 3 weeks every year, but most people don't take care of animals with the quality that we think they should. So we don't want people using animals for anything.
There are so many animal rights issues. It's extensive. There are many animal rights activists concerned about everything from wearing furs to the puppy mills to horse racing to hunting to the factory raising of animals to vivisection. It's broad.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a subject that your website has dealt with that is rarely talked about or dealt with by other organizations?
I would doubt it, because we are committed to animal liberation. So that's no use, no exploitation of any animal in any of those categories. And again, it's important that the website is based on Judeo-Christian values, which is how most of us live in this country, whether we're religious or not. And we believe that it's important to just keep inspiring people and educating people about the realities of all animal treatment so they stop using them. My boss, Reverend Hoffman, he encourages me to never argue religion, which I pretty much thought is a bad idea anyway. But he says to ask people if they believe in God, and if they say yes, his advice is to ask them, is this really how you think God wants his creatures to be treated? And then he said, walk away. Leave them with that question. Don't argue with them. Don't argue biblical passages or this part of the Bible or that. But ask them to really look in their heart. If they believe in God and that God created all these creatures, is this really how they believe God wants his animals to be treated, to be mutilated and used and killed?
You certainly have 100,000 pages to read, lots of information, lots of resources.
I also do a newsletter every week. And in the newsletter, I compile what I've posted and what Frank has posted on the site during the past week. So it goes out every Wednesday. And I always have two major features with pictures. And then the top item is always some good news for animals, some good things that have happened. Sometimes I have to look really hard. And then there's a section on poetry. We have some amazing people who contribute poetry. both spiritual poetry and animal rights poetry, and we have amazing artists. And then we have a section just on articles, just a whole different, covering vast arrays of topics. Some alerts.
I certainly hope we have more good news about animals. Thanks for posting that. Thank you for being my guest.
Thank you much.
I have been speaking with Vita Stram, administrator for all-creatures.org.
Yes.
I'm Nancy Perlman. Thank you very much for joining us, and do tune in again next week.
If you would like free information about these environmental issues, go to www.ecoprojects.org or call 310-559-9160. Environmental Directions with your host, Nancy Perlman, is a community affairs program of the nonprofit organization Educational Communications and this station.